If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It's Sunday, March 17th, 2024, in Cape Coral, Florida, and it's the first real night of spring break. 15-year-old Kayla Rincon Miller is doing what countless teenagers do when school finally lets out for the week, convincing her parents to let her stay out a little bit later than usual. After a little back and forth, they finally agree, and it feels like freedom. Kayla makes plans to meet up with her friends at the movie theater before grabbing something to eat afterward. They watch the new Bob Marley movie, and when it ends, the three girls decide to walk to McDonald's. Instead of taking the main road, they cut down a quiet back street behind a shopping center. They're laughing, singing, filming little videos on their phones. At one point, they jokingly tell Kayla to pretend that the sidewalk is her own personal runway, cheering her on as she playfully struts beneath the glow of the streetlights. It's exactly the kind of carefree night every teenager hopes spring break will bring. The kind of night you think you'll laugh about for years. Across town, another group of teenagers is having a very different evening. They're driving around Cape Coral making videos of their own. But instead of filming friends laughing beneath the streetlights, they're recording themselves posing with firearms, listening to music, and cruising through the city after dark. Neither group knows the other exists, but at approximately 9:30 p.m. that night, those two worlds collided on a quiet back road behind a shopping center in Cape Coral. Within moments, one teenager will be dead. Another will face felony murder charges. And for every young person whose path crossed on that road, life will never look the same again. This is the 13th Juror Podcast, where we unravel complex court cases, investigations, and true crime stories, from high-profile trials to the mysteries that still leave questions unanswered. We examine the facts, weigh the evidence, and explore the arguments shaping each story, just as the jurors do. I'm your host, Brandi Churchwell. Today's episode is the Teen Movie Night Murder, Flora versus Thomas Stein. After months of waiting, spring break had finally arrived. For 15-year-old Kayla Rincon Miller, it was supposed to be the start of a fun week with friends. She had made plans to meet up with her longtime friend Luann and another friend, Emma, for a movie on Sunday night. It wasn't anything elaborate, just a movie, something to eat afterward, and the freedom that comes with finally being out of school. Luann and Kayla had known each other since elementary school. Emma had become friends with Luann a few years earlier and had only met Kayla a couple of times before that night. But that didn't matter. They were teenagers on spring break, excited to spend the evening together. Emma got ready at Luann's house, where the two did their makeup before Luann's older brother drove them to the theater. Kayla met them there a few minutes later. Like most teenagers, they were working with a pretty limited budget. Between the three of them, they barely had enough for the night. So when Kayla got to the theater, the girls did what so many teens have done before them, myself included. They helped sneak her in so that they could all watch the movie together. The girls settled in to watch the new Bob Marley movie, One Love. And when the movie ended a little after 9 p.m., nobody was ready to call it a night. They stepped outside, hung around behind the theater for a while, and tried to decide what to do next. The girls were hungry, and they knew they didn't have enough cash for Waffle House or Chipotle, but there was a McDonald's still open nearby, so they started walking that way. Rather than taking the busy main road, they chose a shortcut, the quieter back street behind the shopping center. As they walked beneath the streetlights, they laughed, sang along to music, and took turns filming little videos on Kayla's phone. At one point, they encouraged Kayla to pretend that the sidewalk was a runway, laughing as she strutted down the middle of the street. They had no idea that those would be some of the last videos ever recorded of her. As the girls walked down that quiet back road, they noticed an SUV coming up behind them. It wasn't flying past them like most cars would. In fact, it slowed down. And as it crept by, Luann and Emma looked over and made eye contact with the driver. He was young, a white male with light-colored eyes and a blonde bowl haircut. There seemed to be at least one or two other teenagers sitting inside as well, but it was really hard to see. But still, in that moment, nothing about it seemed all that unusual. They figured it was just a group of boys checking them out. The SUV kept going, and the girls just shrugged it off and kept walking. But then, just seconds later, they watched the SUV make a U-turn. Now it was coming straight back toward them. As it got closer, the driver flashed the high beams. The bright lights lit up the dark road, making it hard to see what was happening. Then, the SUV pulled to a stop right beside them. Before any of the girls could even process what was going on, the doors flew open. The teen boys jumped out and started running toward them. For just a split second, the girls thought maybe this was some kind of prank. Maybe somebody they knew was trying to scare them. And then they saw the guns, and everything changed. One boy ran toward Emma, pointing a handgun directly at her face. Another rushed toward Kayla. The girls started hearing people yell, "Give me all your money, give me all your stuff." In just a matter of seconds, what started as a fun walk to McDonald's had turned into every teenager's worst nightmare. Everything that happened next unfolded in a matter of seconds. Emma found herself staring down the barrel of a handgun as someone grabbed the crossbody bag draped across her shoulder, yelling for her to hand over everything she had. Luann was screaming that they didn't have any money. And Kayla? Kayla refused to let go of her purse. Inside wasn't much. It was her ID, some lipstick, and the little bit of cash that she had brought with her that night. Just $13. But in that moment, she held on to it. What happened next would become one of the most fiercely disputed parts of this entire case. Witnesses would remember pieces of it differently. Some details changed over time, but everyone agreed on one thing. A struggle broke out, and then there was a gunshot. The sound echoed through the quiet street, and for a split second, Emma thought she had been shot herself. Her ears were ringing, and everything was chaos. People were yelling. She dropped to the ground, trying to protect herself, convinced that another shot was coming. And then she looked over at Kayla. Kayla was lying on the roadway. A bullet had entered her chest. The teenagers who had jumped out of the SUV ran back toward the vehicle. As they climbed inside, witnesses heard someone yell out, "Why did you shoot?" Then, just as quickly as they had arrived, the SUV sped away into the night, and the girls were left standing alone on that dark road. Luann rushed to Kayla's side. At first, Kayla was still awake. She was talking, but she was scared. Luann dropped to her knees and pressed her hands against the wound, desperately trying to stop the bleeding while Emma called 911. As they waited for help to arrive, Kayla asked Luann to call her sister and her grandmother. Within minutes, Cape Coral police officers were on scene. They found three terrified teenage girls in the middle of the roadway, one of them critically wounded. Officers began asking questions, trying to understand what had just happened while waiting for paramedics. Kayla was rushed to Gulf Coast Medical Center, where doctors fought to save her life. Despite their efforts, she died from her injuries. What had begun as a simple Sunday night movie with friends had ended in tragedy. Kayla's killers had vanished into the night. Detectives had no murder weapon, no suspects, no names, just a couple of traumatized teenage girls, a description of a silver SUV, and a crime scene on a dark back road. But what they didn't know yet was that this case would become a masterclass in digital detective work. A trail of surveillance cameras, license plate readers, GPS data, and cell phone records would slowly reveal exactly where that SUV had been and who had been inside it. And the first person investigators would identify wasn't someone they ever expected to be connected to a murder. We'll be right back.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CT&C 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Back at the scene, investigators were already racing to answer the biggest question of the night. Who did this? At that point, they had almost nothing to go on. The girls were understandably terrified. They had just lived through the most traumatic experience of their lives. They were crying, shaking, trying to make sense of something that had unfolded in less than a minute. As officers began separating the girls and taking their statements, they quickly realized that no two recollections were exactly alike. But they were able to remember a few key details. They each described a silver SUV that had slowed down beside them, made a U-turn, and stopped right in front of them when it came back. They all remembered a young white male with a blonde bowl cut behind the wheel. And they remembered at least one other teenager, a black male, wearing a bright red hoodie. But when it came to exactly how many people got out of the SUV, who ran toward which girl, and where everyone was standing when the gun went off, their memories weren't identical. And honestly, that's not unusual. High-stress events often leave people remembering different pieces of the same moment. Detectives knew they couldn't solve this case on eyewitness testimony alone. They needed something that couldn't forget. So they started looking for cameras. Investigators went door-to-door through the shopping center, asking businesses if their surveillance systems had captured anything from that night. And most of them, unfortunately, didn't. But then they caught a break. A nearby thrift store had security cameras pointed toward the road where the girls had been walking. When detectives pulled up the footage, they saw exactly what the girls had described. A silver SUV slowly drove past the three girls. A few moments later, it turned into the shopping plaza, used the parking lot to make a U-turn, and headed right back toward them. The camera didn't capture the shooting itself. But at 9:33 p.m., its microphone captured something almost just as important. The sound of it. A single gunshot. Another nearby business captured what happened next. The same silver SUV speeding away from the area just moments later. Now detectives had something tangible. They knew what the vehicle looked like. Sergeant Alan Precy began slowing the footage down frame by frame, studying the SUV's shape, headlights, the body lines, everything, until he was confident that they were looking for a newer model silver Nissan Pathfinder. Now, that might not sound like much, but it was enough, because Cape Coral Police had access to an automated license plate reader system called Vigilant. Cameras positioned throughout the city photographed passing license plates, creating a searchable database of vehicles moving through the area. Detectives entered everything they knew. The make and model, which was Nissan Pathfinder, and the time frame surrounding the shooting. The search returned just one vehicle that matched. One silver Nissan Pathfinder had been captured traveling through the area that night. But when detectives ran the tag, it didn't come back to a murder suspect. It came back to Hertz. The Pathfinder had been rented. Detectives immediately contacted the rental company, obtained the rental agreement, and learned who had checked out the SUV. The name on the contract was Jessica Stein. At first, that didn't really seem to fit, because the eyewitnesses had described a young blonde male behind the wheel, not an adult woman. But detectives weren't finished, because when they started looking into Jessica Stein, they discovered someone else living at her address. Jessica Stein lived in North Fort Myers with 5 of her children, One of them was her 16-year-old son, Thomas. Tom Stein immediately caught the attention of investigators. The teenage girls had all described the driver as a young white male with blonde hair and light-colored eyes, a description that matched Tom's driver's license photo. Detectives now had someone they wanted to know a lot more about. The investigation quickly widened. Detectives began collecting surveillance video, obtaining search warrants for phone records, and digging into Tom's social media and digital footprint. And as they did, another teenager's name kept surfacing, Jaden Fernandez. Investigators learned that Jaden had spent much of that Sunday with the Stein family. The group had gone to Venice Beach together before returning home later that afternoon, and at first, detectives weren't sure whether Jaden had also been involved in the shooting. He was an initial suspect. But when detectives brought Jaden in for an interview, his mother came in with him. She insisted that her son had been home that night. Their family used Life 360 to track each other's locations, and they had security cameras around the house. She told detectives Jaden had not gone back out after he got back from the beach with Thomas. Rather than simply accepting that explanation, investigators verified it. They checked the location data from his phone, reviewed the family's surveillance cameras, and compared everything with the timeline they were building. And it all matched. Jaden had not been at the scene when Kayla was shot. So instead of becoming a suspect, he became one of the investigation's most important witnesses. Jaden told detectives that Tom had picked him up that evening, and he admitted that it was so that he could buy some marijuana from him. Riding with Tom was another teenager that Jaden knew through him, a boy named Christopher Horn. That was the first time investigators had heard Chris's name. Jaden even helped identify him through social media, giving detectives another piece of the puzzle and another person to investigate. From there, the digital evidence began confirming what Jaden had told them. Detectives found text messages showing that Chris had sent Tom his address just before 8 p.m. that evening. They also located Ring camera footage from Chris's neighborhood, and the video showed the silver Nissan Pathfinder pulling into the street. Moments later, a teenager ran from the house, climbed into the SUV, and the vehicle drove away. Investigators believed that that teenager was Chris Horn. With Tom and Chris now linked together, detectives began layering every piece of digital evidence they had collected. And it was a lot. GPS data from the rental SUV, cell phone records, license plate readers, business surveillance cameras, traffic cameras, cell tower location information. Individually, each piece told only a small part of the story. But together, they created something remarkable. A nearly minute-by-minute map of where that Pathfinder had traveled throughout the night. And according to detectives, that digital trail would place the SUV on the same quiet back road at the exact moment that Kayla Rincon Miller was shot. As detectives continued digging, they uncovered something else that would become an important part of the prosecution's case. Videos. Lots of them. The teenagers had spent much of that weekend documenting their lives on their phones and social media. There were videos from the beach earlier that day, videos of them hanging out with friends, and videos taken just hours before Kayla was shot. But these weren't the kinds of videos that Kayla and her friends had been making as they laughed and pretended the sidewalk was a runway. In several of them, investigators found Tom and Chris posing with firearms while music played in the background as they drove around Cape Coral. One video in particular caught detectives' attention. Tom was holding what appeared to be a Glock pistol. Investigators slowed the video down frame by frame until they were able to make out the firearm's serial number. They traced it back to a Glock 27 that had been purchased by Jessica Stein. They were able to get a search warrant for the Stein home, but by the time they arrived, that Glock was gone. Jessica told investigators that she had kept the gun locked inside a safe in the house, but sometime after the murder, she realized it had disappeared. The gun was never recovered. Investigators couldn't say with certainty that it was the weapon used to kill Kayla, but the videos established something important for the prosecution. They showed Tom and Chris together, armed, and in possession of firearms just before the murder. And when detectives overlaid those videos with the GPS data, surveillance footage, license plate readers, and cell phone records, they believed they had reconstructed almost every single movement the two teenagers had made that night. Arrest warrants were issued for both boys. It took only a matter of days for detectives to arrest Tom Stein. Finding Chris Horn proved to be a little more difficult. By the time investigators were looking for him, Chris had disappeared. Detectives searched for weeks before finally locating and arresting him nearly a month after the murder. And when they did, they discovered that he no longer had the cell phone he had been using the night Kayla was killed. According to Chris, he had thrown it into the Caloosahatchee River the day after the shooting because he knew investigators would eventually trace it back to him. He also admitted getting rid of the .45 caliber pistol he had been carrying that night, telling detectives he threw that into a canal. Despite extensive searches, neither the phone nor the gun was ever recovered. With both teenagers now in custody, prosecutors charged Tom Stein with first-degree felony murder, along with multiple counts of attempted robbery. Chris faced many of the same charges, and if convicted at trial, he too was looking at the possibility of spending the rest of his life in prison. For months, both cases moved forward. Then, more than a year after the murder, everything changed. Chris decided he was willing to cooperate. In exchange for a plea agreement, he agreed to tell investigators what he said really happened on that dark road behind the shopping center. Prosecutors ultimately offered him a plea deal. Plead guilty, testify truthfully against Tom Stein, and instead of facing a potential life sentence, receive a 25-year prison sentence. If he failed to cooperate or wasn't truthful, that deal could disappear. Chris accepted. His account helped prosecutors explain many of the questions that still remained unanswered, and it also became the foundation of the state's theory of what happened that night. By the time the case went to trial in the summer of 2026, prosecutors believed they had assembled a compelling case. They had extensive digital data, social media videos, eyewitness testimony, and now an eyewitness from inside the SUV itself. But the defense was getting ready to tell a different story. They were preparing to argue that investigators had gotten the biggest part of the story completely wrong. And their main piece of evidence, the testimony of the two surviving victims, Luann and Emma. We'll be right back.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
When the trial finally began, prosecutors told jurors this wasn't a random shooting or an accident that spiraled out of control. They argued that this was a robbery from the very beginning. And under Florida law, that mattered. Their theory was that Tom Stein and Chris Horn had spent the evening looking for someone to rob. According to Chris, the pair had initially driven through neighborhoods, checking parked cars to see if any had been left unlocked. They were hoping to steal money or weed or whatever they could find from any of these unlocked cars. At one point, he said Tom suggested robbing someone using an ATM at a nearby bank, but then changed his mind after noticing surveillance cameras pointed toward the ATM machines. Eventually, Chris testified, they ended up near the Marquee Cinemas, where they spotted three teenage girls walking alone down a dark back road. Chris told the jury that Tom decided that those girls would be their target. According to his testimony, Tom had access to two guns that night, both of which had been seen in the videos. Tom was carrying the Glock 27 that belonged to his mother, while Chris carried a .45 caliber 1911 pistol equipped with a laser grip. He said that gun also came from Tom. Chris testified that before they got out of the SUV, he even told Tom to unload his Glock. Chris said his own gun wasn't loaded, but Tom chose to leave a round chambered in his. Chris admitted that he jumped out of the SUV, intending to rob one of the girls, while Tom went toward Kayla. He told jurors that as the robbery unfolded, he suddenly heard a gunshot. Then he yelled the words that several witnesses also remembered hearing that night. "Why did you shoot?" Chris testified that when they raced back to the SUV, he was furious. He couldn't understand why Tom had fired the gun, saying there had been no reason to shoot anyone. The argument continued after they arrived back at the Stein house, where Chris said the two boys fought over what had just happened. According to Chris, the focus quickly shifted from what had happened to covering it up. He testified that the shirts they had been wearing that night were burned. Tom allegedly got rid of the Glock, while Chris disposed of the .45 caliber pistol by throwing it into a canal. The next day, Chris also threw his cell phone into the Caloosahatchee River because he knew investigators would eventually try to trace it. Prosecutors also pointed to another event that happened less than 12 hours after the shooting. The silver Nissan Pathfinder that investigators had painstakingly tracked through surveillance cameras, GPS data, and license plate readers was returned to Hertz the very next morning. Jessica Stein exchanged it for a different SUV. Now, the state never alleged that Jessica knew what had happened the night before, but prosecutors argued that the timing became another piece of the larger timeline they presented to the jury. The prosecution then turned to the forensic evidence. Although the Glock was never recovered, forensic experts testified that the injuries that Kayla sustained were consistent with being caused by a Glock 27. The medical examiner also testified that the gunshot entered Kayla's chest at close range, and another firearms expert explained that the injury pattern and abrasions were consistent with the slide of a Glock making contact during the struggle. While no expert could conclusively identify the missing Glock as the murder weapon, they testified that there was nothing about Kayla's injuries that was inconsistent with that firearm. When prosecutors stepped back and looked at all of the evidence together, the digital timeline, the surveillance footage, the eyewitness testimony, Chris's account, and the forensic evidence, they told jurors it all pointed to the same conclusion. Tom Stein armed himself, set out to commit a robbery, and during that robbery, Kayla Rincon Miller was shot and killed. And under Florida's felony murder law, prosecutors argued that that was enough. Jurors also heard from the two girls who survived that night. Both Emma and Luann took the stand, and through tears, walked the jury back through those final carefree moments before everything changed. They talked about getting ready together, watching the Bob Marley movie, filming silly videos on Kayla's phone, and deciding to walk to McDonald's because it was one of the only places they could afford. Then they described watching the SUV creep past them, seeing it make that sudden U-turn, and then the terror that set in when the boys jumped out with guns. Both girls became emotional as they remembered Kayla's final moments. Luann testified about dropping to her knees, pressing her hands against Kayla's chest trying to stop the bleeding, and hearing Kayla ask her to call her family. Emma described thinking that she had shot herself after hearing the gunfire, only to look over and realize it was Kayla lying in the roadway. Their testimony wasn't just about identifying suspects. It reminded the jury that behind every surveillance video, every GPS point, and every piece of forensic evidence, there was a 15-year-old girl who had left home expecting nothing more than a movie with her friends, and she never made it back. Once the prosecution rested their case, the defense stood up and told the jurors that they believed prosecutors had gotten one critical piece of the story wrong. According to the defense, Tom Stein wasn't denying that he was there that night, and he wasn't denying that he had driven that SUV. He wasn't denying that Kayla Rincon Miller had been shot during a robbery. But what he was denying was that he pulled the trigger. From the very beginning, defense attorneys pointed jurors to what they believed was the biggest weakness in the state's case, the eyewitness testimony. Emma and Luann had been remarkably consistent about some things. Like, they remembered the silver SUV, and they remembered the blonde driver. They remembered the teenager in the red hoodie. And they remembered hearing someone yell, "Why did you shoot?" But when it came to one of the most important questions in this case, which is how many people got out of that SUV, their answers did not necessarily fit with the prosecution's story. And that's because right from the beginning, both Luann and Emma did not describe seeing just two attackers. They described seeing four or five. The defense argued that those inconsistencies weren't just minor details that were confused because of a high-stress situation. They were the entire case. Because if there were four teenagers instead of two, then someone else could have fired that fatal shot. Now, that became the defense's theory. And to tell that story, they made the unusual decision to call Tom Stein himself to the witness stand. And Tom admitted he was driving the Pathfinder that night, but according to him, the robbery was not his idea. He testified that after dropping Jade and Fernandez off, Chris suggested that they go meet up with a couple of his friends. Tom said that he didn't know the two boys personally. He only knew them by the names JD and Trey. According to Tom, he and Chris stopped for several minutes at a church, a stop that detectives had documented through GPS data and surveillance cameras. Prosecutors argued that the stop was insignificant and that nobody was seen getting out of the car. But the defense argued that it was one of the most important moments of the entire case. Tom testified that this was the moment where JD and Trey climbed into that SUV. And from that point forward, he said there were four people inside that car. He described JD as wearing all black and carrying a handgun. He described Trey as wearing red. And as they drove around Cape Coral, Tom said that they saw the three girls walking near the movie theater. According to him, one of the other boys claimed that he recognized them and asked Tom to turn the SUV around. Tom testified that he flashed his headlights simply because he didn't want to hit anyone in the dark, and he was letting them know that they were pulling up. Then, he said everything happened faster than he could process. The other three teenagers jumped out of the SUV. Tom got out too, but insisted he had no idea that they were about to commit a robbery. He told jurors he never had a gun that night. He never demanded money, and he never shot Kayla. Instead, Tom testified that by the time he reached Kayla, she was already struggling with JD. Then, he heard the gunshot. He told jurors that he was just as shocked as everyone else. According to Tom, the person who fired the fatal shot wasn't sitting in the courtroom, it was JD, a teenager the defense argued investigators never identified, never located, and never seriously pursued. If jurors believed Tom's testimony, then the state hadn't simply identified the wrong shooter. They had failed to identify two people who had been inside the SUV that night. We'll be right back.
Ever thought about Botox but worry you'll look, well, overdone? You're not alone. That's exactly why so many people choose Caps. Their approach is all about keeping your expression natural because Botox shouldn't freeze your face. It should refresh it. At Caps, treatments are performed by licensed nurses known for precise and subtle refined enhancements, all overseen by nationally ranked plastic surgeons. Now's the perfect time to start Botox. Book your first appointment and receive a $50 Caps MedSpa gift card. Schedule today at experiencecaps.com. Caps, where confidence begins.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
After hearing days of testimony, reviewing the surveillance footage, listening to experts, and weighing two very different versions of what happened on that dark road in Cape Coral, the case was finally in the jury's hands. The jurors deliberated for roughly 4 hours before returning to the courtroom. One by one, the verdicts were read. Guilty of first-degree felony murder. Guilty of attempted robbery with a firearm. Guilty on all counts. Although the jury found Tom Stein guilty of felony murder, they also made several special findings on the verdict form. They concluded the state had not proven that Tom actually fired the fatal shot, or that he discharged the weapon that killed Kayla. Instead, the jury found he knowingly participated in the armed robbery, possessed a firearm during the crime, and was therefore legally responsible for Kayla's death under Florida's felony murder law. For Kayla's family, it was the end of more than 2 years of waiting for accountability. For Tom Stein, it was the beginning of a very different future. 2 months later, Tom Stein returned to court for sentencing. Before Judge Nick Thompson imposed the sentence, the courtroom heard emotional victim impact statements from Kayla's loved ones and from the two friends who had survived the robbery. Emma spoke about the bullying and blame she had faced in the aftermath, while Luann described feeling as though she had been trapped in a nightmare she could never wake up from. Tom also addressed the court. He acknowledged that getting behind the wheel that night had been a terrible decision, and he admitted that fleeing the scene had helped the perpetrators escape, while maintaining that he had not intended for anyone to die. Rather than asking the judge for a lighter sentence, he made one final request. He asked if he could hug his family before being taken into custody. Judge Thompson denied that request. He said, "You can say goodbye, but you can't have any physical contact." Tom spoke briefly with his family from where he stood before deputies escorted him away. Judge Thompson then sentenced Tom Stein to life in prison for first-degree felony murder. He also imposed 3 consecutive 15-year sentences for the attempted robbery convictions, adding another 45 years to the sentence. It was a sentence that reflected not only the death of a 15-year-old girl, but the jury's conclusion that participating in an armed robbery carries responsibility for everything that follows, even if another participant ultimately pulls the trigger. When you step back from all the legal arguments, the surveillance videos, the forensic testimony, and the competing stories told in that courtroom, it's easy to forget what this case was really about. It was about kids. A group of teenagers who started spring break expecting nothing more than a movie and some late-night food. And another group of teenagers making decisions that would change the course of all of their lives. In the span of just a few seconds, those two worlds collided, and nothing was ever the same again. Kayla Rincon Miller never got to go home that night. Her family will forever live with the empty chair at birthdays, holidays, and milestones that she should have been there to celebrate. Emma and Luann will always carry the memories of those terrifying moments on that dark road. Tom Stein will spend the rest of his life behind bars. And Chris Horn will spend decades in prison for the role he played. There isn't a happy ending here. No matter how you view the evidence, no matter where you fall on the arguments made at trial, 5 teenagers walked onto that road that night, believing that they had their whole lives ahead of them. 1 lost her life. The others lost the futures they thought they were going to have. And maybe that's the hardest part of this case. It isn't just a story about crime or punishment. It's a reminder of how quickly a handful of choices made in just a few seconds can alter the course of countless lives forever. My name is Brandi Churchwell, creator and host of the 13th Juror podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to follow the show on your favorite podcast platform and leave a rating or review. It helps more listeners discover the podcast. And if you know someone who would find this case as fascinating as you did, share this episode with them. For additional episodes, case updates, and more information about the podcast, visit our website at 13thjurorpodcast.com. The evidence has been presented, the arguments have been made, and now comes the same question faced by every juror. What do you believe? Thank you for listening.
Until now, the data your AI depends on has been trapped behind ever-increasing cloud fees. Wasabi created Hot Cloud Storage and is redefining cloud storage for the AI era, delivering simple, predictable cloud storage for AI, analytics, media, and more. Your data is free to move, fast to access, and ready when your AI needs it. Hidden fees add up fast as AI workloads grow. Wasabi's flat pricing eliminates all of it. One rate, no surprises. Learn more and try now for free at wasabi.com. Wasabi, the AI storage cloud. Proud partner of the iHeart Podcast Network.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAP sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons, from tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond. Every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.